And a good afternoon to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical Isle of Vashon. Once again, broadcasting live, unscripted, unrehearsed, from the Gene Voss studio on the Voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the frequency modulated band, and streaming live all over the world from the Kingdom of Sweden on one side of the world to Singapore on the other, and all of the ships and aircraft and stations and Captain Joe's people in between. I have successfully returned from the Kingdom of Sweden, and so my special greetings go to my Stockholm family, from whom I have just returned after a glorious week of full immersion in family and friends of family rank. There's a great deal to be said for the long life when it allows you to weather the storms, the typhoons, the hurricanes of life, and yet be able to be warmed in the sun of friends, family, shipmates, classmates. But before I get into that for just a little bit, I have to go, as I do every week, to the binnacle list. And although there are good and heartening reports of people, Captain Joe's people, who have been on the binnacle list and who are improving, at the same time, there are several who are close to my heart and who are not doing as well as we would hope. My friend, my teacher, my student, my aviation advisor, Captain Truman O'Brien, is one of those. And he is at home, and he is still not recovering as we would have hoped, as we would have thought, and certainly as I would command from the captain's chair if I were able to command such things. And I'm using Captain O'Brien as a metaphor here for all of my people who are hurting and who are not seeing their way to the sunshine and to the light, which happens when we come out on the other end of a very difficult time. I reported here that one of the things that happened was I came into the Gene Voss studio one day, and Truman had trouble getting up from the chair which then became the captain's chair, and that is the one that I'm occupying right now. And he was having a great deal of difficulty getting up from there and standing up straight. If there was ever a person who has stood up straight through his life, it is Truman O'Brien. And it was heartbreaking to me, and it remains heartbreaking to me today, that I have to continue to report that orthopedic problems, which looked as if they might be amenable to some quick repair, are not happening that way. So for all of Captain Joe's people, and in particular those of my Swedish family and those of my Vashon family who are still on the binnacle list, and all of Captain Joe's people, you are in the palm of my hand. And it is my hope and my wish, my command, that you will follow all of the instructions that are given to you by your medical practitioners, so that once again, you will be able to sit in the left seat of that aircraft, Truman, and demonstrate the wonderful airmanship that saved you and Counselor's life. I'm counting on all of those things happening, so carry on. The time that I had in Sweden can only be described as glorious. I know that I use that word over and over again, And I use it because I am using another term that I frequently use, and that is that I am the most fortunate of men. I'm the most fortunate of men for a number of reasons, and one of those is that I have been given the gift of a little bit more time. It's not given to us to know the day nor the hour, but the fact is that I have been given a little bit more time to be what I am, and hopefully a little bit better than what I was. So I have a couple things to say about the trip. And the first one is a little bit of a reflection. I decided to fly to Stockholm, for which the airline code is ARL, Alfa Romeo Lima. And that's because the name of the airport is Arlanda Airport for Stockholm. And I decided to go there on Icelandic Airways. And I had never flown Icelandic before, Icelandic Airlines. I'd never flown Icelandic before, and I did a little bit of research on it, talked to some people, and I realized that the way Icelandic works is that it flies from a number of American ports to Reykjavik, the capital of Iceland. The airline code for that is KEF, which is for Keflavik, and Keflavik is an old World War II air base that has been converted into a much less than world-class international airport. And then you get to Keflavik, you get to Reykjavik, they're both the same thing, KEF, airline code. You get to that place, and you work your way through what can only be charitably described as a scrum, and there are a number of more pejorative terms, several of which are I am not allowed to use. And I'm just reviewing the list of words that I'm not allowed to say, and there are several of them there. And you work your way through that. You work your way through passport control because you are going into the European Union. Iceland is a Schengen country, which refers to the Schengen Treaty, which opened borders amongst all of the countries of the European Union. So you go through passport control at KEF, and then you are puked out into this enormous area where there are a number of flights that fan out all over Europe. It is quite possible, as it almost happened to me, that if we did not have the checks and balances of electronic boarding through the boarding pass process, that I could have ended up, instead of in Seattle, I could have ended up in Washington Dulles, airline code IAD, India Alpha Delta. And the reason for that is that in this huge departure area, Delta 25, across from Delta 26, that there were people who wanted to go to Dulles. There were people like your captain who wanted to go and were booked to go to SeaTac, airline code Sierra Echo Alpha, SEA, and they were all mixed up. And some, no doubt, had been partaking of the output of the alcohol dispensaries, which are ubiquitous to the terminal building at Reykjavik. So, in fact, I almost did that once. I almost ended up in Singapore when I was supposed to go to Hong Kong. But that was a long time ago, and that was before electronic boarding. And that's another story for another time. In any case, it is a majestic mess up. And there are people everywhere. There are passports of all various colors, flavors, and hues, of all nationalities. There are languages of all colors and hues, and all of them mixed up in this great, enormous mixing bowl that is KEF. And you have to go through it if you are going from any place in America that is served by Iceland Air to any place in Europe that is served by Iceland Air. You all funnel through this little tiny wee puka. Puka is the Hawaiian word for hole. you get funneled through this little tiny puka, and then you get spit out on the other side to go, and hopefully to go to the correct destination. You may believe, oh, Captain, you are overstating the situation. All of Captain Joe's people out there, first of all, I never embellish a story. Mary R. used to claim that I did, but that was never true. I never embellish a story. I certainly never embellish anything that has to do with travel. And the reason for that is that as we accumulate more and more chronological years, there seem to me anyway to be more and more places that I either want or need to go. And that with each one of those places that I want or need to go, that involves going through terminals. The terminals all over the world are getting much larger. Some of them apparently cover an entire county. And the people who are in charge of organizing where you get off one plane and change to another are really doing their job. For example, at Chicago O'Hare, airline code ORD, Oscar Romeo Delta, I was dropped off at one place in the midfield terminal, and my connecting flight was as far as you possibly can go at the other end of the other midfield terminal, where you have to go through that little or not so little tunnel and listen to that music that they play while you are riding from one of the midfield terminals to the other. I tell you all of these things just to give you a warning. As for Icelandic Air itself, I was on four different flights in this week-long journey, and the quality of service varied widely from incredibly bad to exceptionally good. And the on-time business, all four of those aircraft were almost always right on time. Two of the airplanes on which I flew had a certain huge number of hours on them. The airworthiness certificates were printed on parchment. But I'm not going to either persuade or dissuade you from flying on Icelandic. I am just giving you the warning, the captain's loving warning from the captain's chair, that in order to fly Icelandic, you must go through KEF, Keflavik, Reykjavik. There's no way to avoid it. So put all of that into your calculus. In a parenthetical insertion, one of the pursers on one of the flights was a true Brunhilde. And she made it very clear that she was the captain of the cabin crew, and she did not particularly like any of us, and she did not particularly like herself or her job. So if you get a Brunhilde, then you may want to do a 180 and decide that you're going to take another airplane. Coming up next month, I had a call from my friend and colleague in California who is working on the glacier reunion. And he reminds me that it is coming up on the 16th to the 18th of September here in Seattle. For all of Captain Joe's people who are also icebreaker people, all of Captain Joe's people who are not icebreaker people, but who wish they were, and all of Captain Joe's people who are not icebreaker people, who do not wish that they ever were one, and are still wearers of the shield, this event is for you. The way you learn more about it is to go on to the Coast Guard Channel community, and there is a great deal of information about it. And I think you probably can, I believe it also has its own website. Do you think you can call up just Glacier Reunion in Seattle and get hold of that? So a couple things have been happening in stories which we have been following together, and one of those is some more information about the terrible and tragic McCain and Fitzgerald collisions. Those were two of the destroyers that were in collisions in several years ago. I reported at length on them at that time, and I've been following the Navy's reaction to all of that. And the most recent one is a series of reports that have come up in the professional military press, and in particular in the professional Navy press in such places as the Naval Institute and a couple of other places to which I subscribe. And all of these are missing the point. They are going back and talking about training. They are talking about fatigue. They're talking about protocols, and they're talking about checklists, and they're talking about things like that. But they're missing the point. The whole point has to do with people. And it has to do, in particular, with the total and personal accountability of each commanding officer, each captain. For both of those ships, I believe that this was their first, the captain's first command. And I believe that in both of those ships, they had been XOs in the same class and possibly in the same ship. I refer back to my own career. I started my command career very young. I had my first command at sea when I was 23. I was the only officer. I was also the captain. And I had 17 men, including two chief petty officers. And then I had five other commands at sea after that. I had one at each rank level. My experience grew, my confidence as a both as a professional seaman, as a ship handler, and as a captain, as a commanding officer grew. And I came out of that at in my retirement years. I came out of that as the fleet manager for and the program manager for everything that the Coast Guard did in the ice anywhere in the world. So I felt that the service had done the right thing with me and had done the right thing by my crews. No crew wants to belong to a ship that cannot get itself alongside without taking out part of the ship and taking out part of the dock. And yet, when we see two beautiful destroyers, to say nothing of very expensive destroyers, but more to the point, two crews that lost shipmates, two captains that were personally and personally accountable and responsible for the loss of their hands. It has got to be a terrible, terrible weight for any commanding officer to carry. And yet, I am of the conviction that those commanding officers did not have the experience. They did not have the experience in particular, the experience of really going to sea, not the education, not the simulator training, none of those things are a replacement for taking your own ship into a winter Pacific typhoon and surviving. And so all of the material that I've been reading about this always comes back to me with the same thing. Why are we talking about crew fatigue? Sure, those are things that have to be taken into consideration, but any experienced commanding officer knows exactly how far he can push his crew. He knows exactly how to change to train his crew so that they will be able to handle fatigue. They will know how to do it. You set up your watch rotations so that there is rest on station, for example. I've done this many, many times. Where you just get rest while you can. You lie down on the steel deck. As a captain, I would get up into the captain's chair and I would rest my eyes in the captain's chair for 15 or 20 minutes or a half an hour and be good for hours more. There are all kinds of things that you do, and you learn these things by experience, and you don't get them in a classroom. And you don't get them by a simulator, a rules of the road simulator. The only way you get them is to fight your ship through a Pacific typhoon and come out alive with all of your crew alive on the other side. The other thing that other situation which I've been which I have been following, which is very much in the same vein, the personal and complete accountability of commanding officers, is the Bonhomme Richard. And it turns out that, first of all, there is this young seaman recruit that is going to be tried by general court-martial for hazarding his ship. And I don't know, I've not read the investigation, I don't know whether or not that is a legitimate charge or not. But what I do know is that there are a lot of people between that seaman recruit. And when you look at his photograph, he is incredibly young. I'm not saying that he should not be held accountable if, in fact, he set that fire. But what I am saying, and I am saying that her captain, right from the very beginning, so far as I can tell from everything I've read, let down his crew, he lost his ship, and he should never, ever command again. I don't know what's happened to him, and I don't know what's happened to where he is in the active duty promotion list. I don't know any of those things. What I do know is that having read the investigation, having been in shipyards where your ship is at personal risk the whole time that she is being worked on, that every possible step, every possible drill and exercise in what's called in-port fire and rescue could well have saved that fine ship from the destruction that overtook her. There's a sidelight to it. It turns out that her sister, USS Essex, in the same naval station, they were not in a shipyard, by the way. They were in a naval station that was carrying out shipyard-level work. I would sure be looking at that if I were her type commander. Had another fire on the same day in a mattress in a berth deck that was not being used. And probably that was a close-run thing. And apparently, the fire watch that was supposed to be doing its job did its job. They got the fire out. But this fact is only now coming to light, and the defense counsel for this young sailor who is being charged in a general court-martial with the loss of Bonhomme Richard, Bonnie Dick, is alleging that possibly the same person or persons lit both fires. There are some similarities between the two. And in any case, he's doing his job in that he is casting some doubt on the validity of the charges being lodged against this seaman. More to come on all of this, you may be sure. The ferry system, which serves the magical Isle of Vashon. When I arrived in SeaTac in international arrivals, and by the way, I lust in my black captain's heart to do some work with the way that they've got that organized. I thought for a while that I was in Keflavik working my way through passport control, and I know that some of Captain Joe's people have done some recent international travel, and maybe their experience was much better than mine. But I found that the way that they were herding, rather than some organized way of managing all of the people as they get off of airplanes for international travel, to get them past the sign that says, "Welcome home to the United States." Yes, there's a sign that says that. Welcome to the United States. And you're being herded around by these GS3 and GS5, maybe even employees of SeaTac Airport, to get through these choke points so that you can get up to passport control and to be talked to by somebody who really loathes his or her job. Such an important job to make sure that people who are coming into this great land that we all continue to serve, or at least Captain Joe's people, continue to serve. The important job of making sure that the people who come in are people who are and should be allowed to come in. In any case, I worked my way through passport control. I worked my way through retrieving my motor car from SeaTac Park, run by a wonderful, wonderful Somalian family. And where I know my vehicle is safe whenever I go out of town. And I picked up my vehicle and opened up the Andy phone to see what possible ferry alerts there were. A good thing it was that I had not planned to come back to the Magical Isle on the south end, because the ferry system had, after the afternoon ferry at about 1700, they had shut the whole route down, claiming that they did not have enough Coast Guard documented people to man the boat and thus to run the ferry back and forth. So my plan was the one that I executed, and that was to go to the north end. I bring all this up over and over again because my despair, I seldom despair, and I'm not despairing here because there's a way that these things can be fixed. My disgust, there we go, that's my disgust with this whole thing, is that the ferry system seems to be content with just reporting to us, who pay for them, that having not enough people and having no plan for getting enough people to man, they've just shut the system down. No word as to what the repair plan is. No word except that, well, we think we'll probably get it underway tomorrow morning, Monday morning, so everybody can go to work. Those people who go off the end and into Tacoma. Well, they did. They found enough people. They went out into the bushes, and I'm reminded of the biblical story about people who were invited to a wedding but did not have a wedding garment. This is very similar to that. I think that the ferry system just goes out on Pearl Street in Tacoma and lies in wait for people that might possibly have a Coast Guard document so that they can send them to sea. I know that's not happening. But the whole story is so emblematic of things that we have come to accept as a result and as an excuse, the virus. So, my offer remains to assume command of the ferry system for 6 months, pro bono. And now, when my off time, I have got several suggestions as to what can be done at SeaTac to eliminate this huge milling about of people working their way up to passport controls so that they can come back into their own country. Having delivered myself of all of that whining, mewing, and puking, it remains for me to say that my last week was, in the finest sense, a wonderful, wonderful week. And I hope that in my broadcast from the Reval Hotel on the balcony with Professor Reinhard, I hope that that broadcast was accepted and appreciated for what it really was. And that was my eternal gratitude that I have been given just a few years left. Let us hope that they are many. At least I hope that there are many. There are a few people in the world that hope they are many. There are probably a few people that hope that I might not make it through the rest of the day, but we'll deal with those people separately. And so I close this broadcast, as I always must, with a promise that next week I have a friend coming on who is a former resident of one of our lighthouses out at, she lived out at the lighthouse at New Dungeness. And she's going to come on with me, and I'm going to exhibit my disdain over a set of directives which have come out about tattoo policy in the armed forces of the United States. And with that, this is your Captain Joe. As always, I'm up in the captain's chair. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And I want all of you to take care of those for whom you are responsible and accountable. Watch their six. And I am watching yours. And as always, I am on station and watching properly.